Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. Fred Williams is on assignment. Today we want to talk about a fossil in amber. You know, fossils trapped in amber is such a fascinating topic. Actually, this is two fossils, and they come from birds. And to help us understand this is Real Science Radio's favorite fossil expert from Dallas, Texas, Brian Thomas. Brian, welcome back to Real Science Radio.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
I'm so thrilled that you're here because tonight you're speaking at the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship. And so we want everybody to come out to that. It's 7 o'clock tonight. We'll give the address later in the show. But tonight you're not talking about these bird fossils in amber, right?
This
is a different topic.
Tonight is dinosaur fossils.
Yes.
Right. But it's the same general subject because what we see in these amber fossils, we see scientific evidence that they were deposited recently. And I've got some evidence from dinosaurs that look like they were deposited recently within thousands of years, not millions of years ago.
Not millions.
Yeah.
So these two fossils in amber, maybe you could describe those and then we could talk through what we could learn from just these. There's so many pieces of amber on the open market around the world, and many have organisms that you could see inside of the amber.
Right. They're used as jewels, jewelry. The Burmese amber, traditionally, is one of the richest sites. Jewelers, though, don't like the insect inclusions because it looks like, why do you want to wear a mosquito around your neck?
That's kind of creepy. You're wearing
a bug, right? Yeah. But sometimes they do. I just read this paper just a few days ago, published in Nature Communications, where they described in detail whole bird wings, one in each chunk of amber, baby bird, like hatchlings.
So these are little birds, because the chunks of amber are not huge.
They fit inside the palm of your hand. Each one of these has a bird wing. And so the scientists troll the market there in Myanmar, which formerly was called Burma. And they look for...
Southeast Asia next to Thailand.
Right. They look for inclusions that might have scientific significance. And boy, did they find it when a jeweler was preparing a necklace. They were going to call it Angel's Wings. And it's got these little bird wings trapped in amber. This is significant. This is amazing for several reasons. And we're going to talk about those today.
All right. And like, for example, dinosaurs supposedly evolved into birds. And there's all kinds of birds in the dinosaur lair, like... They're already there having a grand old time. So you've shared with me some of your notes on these fossils. Could we first talk about a couple things about this amber? One is erosion. Like, why are they even there? And then two is all the organisms that are found in amber that look identical to modern organisms of the same species. And evolution is change. And creation is stasis. And so those two things, if we could start with those first, how about erosion? Should this stuff really be on the surface of the earth? If it's, how old are these fossils supposed to be?
The age assignment for these ambers is about 100 million years. So that puts it in the secular perspective. It puts it in Cretaceous.
So Cretaceous and well into the dinosaur era.
Dinosaur era. So the little birds whose wings got trapped in amber, well, in tree resin that later hardened and turned into amber, not much later, though, because it's got claw marks. These little birds, these ancient extinct birds, had little claws on their wings. Some modern birds...
The claw marks are in the amber. In other words, the bird is trying to get away.
The bird's trying to get away. He's trying to escape. He's trying to claw his way out, but the resin is flowing too fast. There's too much resin, and it trapped the little birdie, at least its wing.
Its wing. It could be when its wing was trapped, a predator might have come by and eaten the rest of it.
It's possible, but this is a massive catastrophe going on. I mean, you have to break whole giant limbs off of branches, off of trees, in order to get this much
this kind of resin
to flow this fast. But yeah,
so it could be a log floating by and breaking off the rest of the animal.
It could
from
be
the wing.
It could be anything.
Yeah, who knows?
It could have rotted after it was buried in sediment.
Okay.
But anyway, but it's in, like you said, it's in dinosaur rocks. It's in dinosaur assigned layers. So it's Cretaceous. So that's got this age assignment in the secular perspective of 100 million years. Because, by the way, you have to have the millions of years in order to get the evolution story to work. If you
right.
if you don't have the millions of years, then there's no way that evolution.
Right.
When I say evolution, of course, I mean
Darwinian.
Yeah, particles to people.
Macro evolution.
Right.
The young Earth is a 100% antidote to atheism and even Darwinism, because the number of atheists who believe in a young Earth is zero. We know the actual number. It's zero. And so if you have millions of years, billions of years in a Big Bang universe, then people could imagine that there's no God. But when you have a young Earth, there's no way around the Bible as the accurate history of the world.
So if that's right. And so if you say, wow, these ambers and these fossils, based on erosion rates, based on other subjects that we'll talk about, they look like they were deposited only recently, which erases the 100 million years. Now you've got no space for evolution. And then you've got the Bible comes right back in as the truth of history. And that's offensive to some of our secular colleagues.
But we'll look at the science
right.
to help people who can't hardly hear someone mention the word God. They could maybe just hang in there. We'll talk about the science. And then maybe you could reconsider the scriptures.
Sure.
Yeah.
Good idea, Bob.
You are. Brian, by the way, I said you're our favorite fossil expert out of Texas. You're with the group started by the famed Henry Morris, ICR, the Institute for Creation Research. And so thank you for your life's work there and the whole team. Just awesome what you guys are doing there.
Appreciate it. And I appreciate that you take our results and our studies and you share it with your audience. That's what we're in business for,
wow.
so to speak.
Wow. And it helps us, because otherwise we wouldn't have the content
right.
to share. So thank you. And you guys got all kinds of scientists on staff there, from Jason Lyle, Jake Hebert, and Tim is a geologist. Is that right?
Dr. Clary, a petroleum geologist.
Yeah.
And Jeff Tompkins is our geneticist. Mm. And we have experts in a wide variety of fields. Vernon Cupps is our nuclear physicist. Mm. And we're investigating all the sciences that actually confirm the Bible. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to illustrate and explain and dig into the details mm-hmm. of the science that does confirm the Bible. And, and every single discipline has plenty of it. But my favorite discipline that has evidence that confirms the Bible is really fossils.
Well, here's this piece of amber that's 100 million years old. So right there, it disproves the Bible, right? Because the chronology in the Bible gives you an earth that is less than 10,000 years old. But when they say this comes from the Cretaceous period, we're talking a time scale way beyond the Bible. But how about this? A few years back, you wrote an article on erosion and the erosion rates of the continents. So if they're saying that this bird was flying around, these two birds flying around on the surface of the earth, and some tree is undergoing a catastrophic destruction, resin's flowing, the bird gets trapped in the resin. Okay, how long would it take for an entire continent to erode to sea level?
And erase that bird fossil with it.
Yeah. Erase any fossils that had existed, right.
Right. Well, several years ago, geologists did a study. It was actually a meta study of other
published peer-reviewed studies.
Right. Yeah. Measurements of erosion rate. They determined that erosion rates are much faster in valleys, but the overall erosion rate was about 40 feet for every million years, which is slow. Generally, but
sure, you're talking about rock, right? Outcrops,
right?
When rock is on the surface. Now, this study, it was published in the Geological Society of America journal.
In their journal GSA Today.
Yeah, so this is a mainstream secular source.
Right, and they came up with 40 feet every million years. And then I took that and I thought, well, wait a minute. But the Earth has thick continents. And the average thickness of a continent is about 2,000 feet.
2,000 feet.
So if we're eroding 40 feet every million years, then it would only take 50 million years to make a water world. Erosion
should have erased. In other words, erode the continents.
The continents down to sea level after 50 million years. And yet these fossils are supposed to be twice that age. So these fossils should have been eroded down to sea level twice over, according to measured erosion rates.
So, and even though there is the claim of seafloor spreading and mountain building, when you take these erosion rates where the current continents are eroded to sea level in 50 million years. And you take these fossils that are supposedly 100 million years old. That means the continents were eroded to sea level twice. Then you go to Archaeopteryx, 150 million years old. All the continents eroded to sea level three times. And then you go to Cambrian, Precambrian, and it's 500 million years old.
Supposedly.
So I think you get to the point where you've got Archaeopteryx has to be living like 2 miles below sea level in order to explain why its fossils have not eroded into the sea. Or I'm exaggerating, but that concept.
Right, right. That's it. So the erosion rates, as slow as they are, they argue against millions of years age assignments for these rock layers. Rock layers that include dinosaurs and these ambers.
Mm. Wow. And so that's one way of looking at this particular issue.
It's one way that we know that the age assignment is wrong.
Right.
It's not based on science as much as maybe something else. Maybe a necessity for evolutionary
progression. A worldview that is secular, materialist, so that there's no God, which motivated Darwin and Richard Dawkins and 10,000 others. But then there are Christians who call themselves theistic evolutionists, and they're not trying to do away with God, but it seems to me that they're motivated by a desire to be accepted, it seems.
Accepted by their secular colleagues.
Yeah, right.
To get esteem and...
Otherwise, Francis Collins, the head of the Human Genome Project, he could say, well, how does this stack up with erosion rates? And the whole thing falls apart. There's another argument that Stephen Jay Gould made years ago. He's a secular evolutionist. He rejected this slow, gradual evolution, and he came up with something, punctuated equilibrium. But he said that the fossil record is a record of stasis, that creatures don't change. It's not a record of change that Charles Darwin needs. So he proposed an alternative theory. Well, in these amber fossils, could we call amber fossils?
Sure.
Yeah. In these amber fossils, you have written about, you've made a catalog of creatures that have not changed that have been preserved in amber. Could you talk about that?
The Burmese ambers contain a range of plants and animals, mostly insects and arthropods, that look just like today's versions. So what we're saying is, well, let me start over. What the evolutionary position must now maintain is that for 100 million years, natural selection and mutation, the supposed engine of evolution,
yeah,
did nothing. Mutations have not been occurring for 100 million years. Natural selection has not been weeding out the mutants and making better creatures.
Even though dinosaurs died out, the whole world changed dramatically. And these creatures, evolution,
asteroids,
didn't see fit.
Volcanoes, and yet these creatures.
The KT boundary, everything happens. And so what creatures are.
The Burmese ambers include fungi, different species that look like today's, flowers look like today's, grass, ferns, bits of bamboo, click beetles, weevils, moths, grasshoppers, mayflies, caddisflies, insects called lace wings. Our favorite insect, cockroaches, look the same.
Yeah.
Bark beetles.
Oh, we know about those in Colorado.
Okay. Walking sticks.
Pine beetles.
Cicadas look the same as today's. Plant bugs. Bees. Longhorn beetles. Ichneumonid wasps. Gnats. Midges. Queen ants. Praying mantises. Centipedes. Millipedes. Jumping spiders. Ticks. Scorpions. Garden spiders. I have to take a breath here. Nematodes, which is roundworms. There's a snail shell found in the Burmese amber, looks like today's snails, lizard feet, and a couple gecko feet, or at least one gecko foot, looks exactly like today's gecko feet. They all look like today's versions.
And so the gecko's feet, just that topic you could do,
yep,
write a whole book on.
Yes.
How sophisticated it is.
Right.
And one of the things we predicted here on Real Science Radio is that organisms that have, like, say, flight or echolocation or whatever higher functions, we're not going to find them in the fossil record where they didn't yet have echolocation. And in other words, geckos had this amazing ability to climb and stick upside down from when God created them.
And that's what the fossils show. It's either a gecko foot or it's not. There's no almost gecko foot anywhere.
Right.
It's either centipede or it's not. There's no almost centipede. There's no almost longhorn beetle. There's no almost, you see what I'm saying? It's completely like it is today.
Well, and these creatures, many of them, it seems like there are thousands of organisms that could sense the Earth's magnetic field for all kinds of purposes. And this is a bit off topic, but just real quickly, scientists have been figuring out in the brains of these organisms, including sea turtles and birds and all kinds of creatures, there's little tiny iron particles, and that they actually can react to the magnetic field of the Earth. And then the organism's brain has the ability to process that. So if you think in a Darwinian worldview, how does that arise in a stepwise fashion through random mutations and natural selection? What, you start getting iron in your brain and the iron starts to line up and then your brain has to do what with that? What? It's absurd beyond measure. It's obvious it's driven by a desire to remove God from the equation. And indeed, even theistic evolutionists say God has no part in the whole program. That's theistic evolutionists.
Which is weird to me, why someone would say that they're a theist, so therefore they believe in God, and yet they believe God had nothing to do
with creation. He was the originator, and that's it.
Everything then happened. He's just thrown in sort of as an afterthought.
Yeah.
In their view.
Well, because evolution is undirected change, and you can't have directed undirected change because then you've totally destroyed your claim to believe in evolution. And so that's why theistic evolutionists have no place for God. It's only Darwin.
Well, these creatures didn't change at all, hardly.
So you mean there's grasshoppers in amber and we could identify them? There's so many fossils from the fossil record, like shrimp, that they are identical to modern shrimp.
Right.
But what scientists have done is they've given them different names, the scientific nomenclature.
Sure.
They'll give them a different species name. In fact, both of the binomial name, they'll give them two different names when they're identical.
Right.
Because they want to present the illusion that this was a different creature.
Almost identical. For example, you and I were talking at lunch today, and you mentioned that there's a mammal that was eating a dinosaur. Well, that mammal looks virtually identical to a Tasmanian devil. Huh. But they don't call it a Tasmanian devil. They call it Rapenomimus. Huh. You know, and then when they find, you know, because it's in dinosaur layers with dinosaurs in its belly.
Yeah.
Then they find a beaver lookalike. But they don't call it a beaver. You know, it's Castorocaudatus. Mm. And you know what? It looks like a beaver. It's got a tail like a beaver.
And how about all
How about calling it a beaver?
How about all the natural variation in horses? How about in dogs? They might say, well, if dogs had gone extinct, they could easily say, well, that wasn't a dog. That's a difference. Or if we found a dog fossil, they could easily say, well, that was a different creature.
Well, they certainly give it a new species name because when you name it, you get recognition and you get funding. And you get to present a paper, and you get grants. And so it's not objective as we often think it is.
And if you pointed out that this amber would have eroded away in 50 million years, you're not going to get your grant, you're not going to get your recognition, and they won't publish you either.
Correct.
Yeah. So that is difficult.
You have to play the game by the evolutionary rules, or you don't get publications. And if you don't get publications, you don't get grant money. If you don't get grant money, you don't eat.
Right. Could you describe these fossils a bit more? What was in the amber?
Whole bird wings, little hatchlings. We're talking feathers still planted into the skin. Skin still present. And bone locked in these ambers. Bone, skin. Some of the skin had been carbonized, presumably from heating. Some of the skin is turned into transparent. So it has decayed partly. Mm. But the feathers are fully flight feathers. They're from baby birds of an extinct kind called Enantiornithes. Anyway, it looked like a crow, but it had a long tail and little claws on its wings.
Now, claws on its wings, PBS, the Discovery Channel, they'll say, see, this was a primitive dinosaur-era bird because it had claws on its wings.
Well, I mean, the Huatzin today in the Amazon jungles, the juveniles have a claw on their wings. They use it to claw their way out of the...
out of the egg.
Out of the egg, I think. So what are you going to say, that the modern Huatzin is a dinosaur bird?
Right. Well, in fact, Jack Horner says that a chicken is a dinosaur.
Well,
chicken is a dinosaur, and we're fish, I think.
Well, yeah, a lot of people say a lot of things.
You don't have to prove anything anymore, because everything is a fish. You didn't evolve from a fish. You are a fish. And they really do. They say chickens are dinosaurs. They always say non-avian dinosaurs. They never say dinosaurs anymore,
right,
ever.
Right.
They only say non-avian dinosaurs, because otherwise they're talking about a chicken McNugget. They're talking about chicken otherwise. They think the chicken is a dinosaur.
They're so different. And the evolutionary steps couldn't possibly occur stepwise to turn a dinosaur into a bird. The anatomies are completely different. So let's say, let's just do a thought experiment and try to rearrange your scooter to turn it into a even something similar, like maybe a motorcycle. Well, what are you going to do? Put the motorcycle engine on your scooter? It's too big. It doesn't fit. So you have to modify something else. And you have to modify something else to modify that.
Well,
and eventually what you realize is, in order to get all the right pieces in all the right places, you have to basically build a motorcycle
from scratch.
Yes.
Well, let's say a bus to a plane. Say a bus, an actual Greyhound bus, and you want to make a plane. You're probably much better off starting without the bus. Scrap the bus. Start making a plane. And it turns out the more we learn about Hox genes and all these regulatory genes, you really need a high-level design. You can't design organisms from the bottom up. It has to be from the top down.
You have to have a plan for the whole package.
And that's how the genetics work. That's how the organism develops in the womb through its fetal stage and all. The meeting tonight that you're speaking at, the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship, and I can't wait for that, that is at 7 o'clock. It's in Southeast Denver. So it's at a church, Calvary Apostolic Church, 5900 East Yale Ave, real easy to get to, I-25 to Yale, and you go east just like 5 blocks or so, and there you are. So I-25, south of Denver, get off on Yale and head east, and you'll come right to Calvary Apostolic Church. That's at 7 o'clock, so that's all about dinosaurs.
Right, and at that meeting, I'm going to be excited to present two evidences within dinosaur bones themselves that are very difficult to reconcile with their millions of years age assignment. So it's science being presented at a church, which that's good, right?
Mm. Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, I like it a lot. So what else about these amber fossils?
We're talking about these wings trapped in amber. The wings themselves have feathers. Feathers are made of protein. Protein is called keratin. Skin is made of proteins also, a lot of collagen protein, for example. And these materials fall apart. They decay according to the second law of thermodynamics. This is a basic law. Every system obeys it, and biochemicals obey it. So unless you have an organism that's still living with cells that are repairing and replacing these biochemicals, which is what cells do, they will fall apart. Mm-hmm. But look inside this amber, and you see it's still intact. So what do we do? Do we wave a magic wand and say, chemistry hasn't been occurring for the last 100 million years?
Right.
Well,
and it's like the blood cells in T-Rex bones. This stuff should have decomposed within hundreds of thousands of years. It shouldn't be there 68 million years later.
These wings should have turned into mush, dust. There should be no definable... I mean, they have the barbs and barbules, the microscopic...
the way the feathers connect. In fact, we sell a video at our store, rsr.org. You just click on the store and browse the science department. And I don't know if you've seen this, Brian. It's called Flight, the Genius of Birds. What a fabulous video. Paul Nelson is in here. We had Paul Nelson on the show talking about this. And they show exactly what you're talking about. And the sophistication of the design, which will blow your mind just with a feather. It is phenomenal. And then they go and they show a hummingbird and how it hovers. And when it drinks, the nectar from a flower. I had never known this, but its tongue comes out, and its tongue is a contraption of bays that open up. Their lids open up, and it fills up with the nectar, and the bays close, and then the whole thing is retracted. And this has only been learned recently. This is all wildly sophisticated, beyond our imagination, and God did all this.
He did, and according to these fossils, these enantiornithine birds, he did it completely right from the start. So these are flood deposits. These ambers were deposited during the flood. These birds may have been looking at a dinosaur 1 minute, and then, a wave of water crashes the tree, breaks off limbs, and then the tree's defense mechanism kicks in. It oozes out resin, and it traps the bird not long ago, because the bird wing is still intact inside
only
the amber.
Thousands of years ago. We only have a couple minutes left, and then I'll have to get to your event tonight. But let me ask you this. When I look in amber, I'm astounded by how clear it is. Should it be that clear after 100 million years?
Ambers that were collected 100 years ago sit in museum shelves. They turn dark. They turn black. Older ambers have developed cracks. So the amber material itself falls apart, and it shouldn't last for a million years.
So they're exposed to the oxygen in the atmosphere.
Oxygen
obviously does a number on the amber.
It does, and there's nowhere in Earth's crust where oxygen does not penetrate to some degree.
So 100 million years of oxygen in the sediments that these amber are found in is going to destroy this stuff.
That and microbes. There are certain microbes that eat the amber. It's a rich carbon source for them. So the ambers themselves should be gone. The bird wings should be gone. They shouldn't even be there if it's even 1 million years old, let alone the 100 million age assignment, which I think is wrong based on the science.
Brian, I know you've written an article on this. When will it be published?
It'll be published on our website, icr.org, next week.
Oh, that's just great. So ICR, the Institute for Creation Research, founded by the great Henry Morris, and we have what now? Henry III is the head of ICR.
The founder's son.
Yes.
Right.
And so just so great that you're there in Dallas. Thank you for your work. And I'll be there tonight. I mean, Lord willing, maybe a meteorite would hit or something, but I plan on being there. And I can't wait and urge everyone in the audience who's within, you know, a drive of Denver, an hour drive, please get there at I-25 in Yale at the Calvary Apostolic Church, 7 o'clock. Thank you so much, Brian. What an honor to have you back on Real Science Radio.
I appreciate it very much.
This is Bob Enyart for Fred Williams and the whole crew here at RSR. May God bless you. Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.